to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, August 29, 2022. A former U.S. member of Congress visiting South Sudan says the relations between his country and South Sudan is bad.
But we believe it can change to the better if we have the right environment. And we're not only coming with words, but we have specific suggestion.
And Sudanese journalists have formed an association to protect the interests of media workers in the country.
The Sudanese journalists have more than 30 years struggled to get back their syndicate.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group led by a former Republican U.S. congressman met with South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his cabinet over the weekend. Former Michigan lawmaker Mark Schildjander says U.S. sanctions on South Sudanese individuals have hampered progress. Sheila Pony reports for VOA from Juba.
Mark Daly's agenda says the delegation's Saturday meeting with President Kiir in Juba was aimed at coordinating an environment in which U.S. officials will look more favorable on relations, which he describes as not good at the moment.
But we believe it can change to the better if we have the right environment. And we're not only coming with words, but we have specific suggestions and action points that'll help create an environment where sanctions and embargoes and other issues will fall away if the right environment is created.
On May 26 this year, the United Nations Security Council voted to extend the arms embargo and individual sanctions by 1 year until May 31, 2023. 10 countries, including Ghana, the United Kingdom, and the United States, voted in favor of Resolution 2633, which was adopted 10 to 1. China, Gabon, India, and Kenya-Russia Federation abstained. They did not vote to lift the sanctions or the embargo. In adopting the resolution, the Security Council strongly condemned past and ongoing human rights violations in South Sudan and expressed deep concern at continued fighting in that country. The Council also extended the arms embargo to prevent the direct or indirect supply, sell, or transfer of arms to the territory of South Sudan by member states. Speaking to reporters after the meeting, South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomru said listening and talking to 15-member delegation provided an opportunity to explore ways to rebuild South Sudan-U.S. relations.
It was only put in one question, maybe two, and the question was, this is a question from the U.S. delegation, where do you want to see South Sudan in the next 5 years? That was the first question. In terms of the next 5 years, in terms of the economy, and in terms of justice, to be specific. And the next question was, what specific help do you in South Sudan want in the areas that are of challenge to you as a government? This is just really the question. But that question took a number of ministers to speak about.
So Jenda said he would discuss with UN government officials how to support the South Sudanese government and steer the country towards peace, prosperity, and justice.
Because we were here in the beginning with you. But we want to change that lull into enthusiasm, hope, and partnership. And that's why we're here.
Barnaba Marial Benjamin, the minister for the presidency, says the delegation asked the government about how the sanctions have impacted the country and how the group might help get the sanctions.
What the ministers, we want the sanctions to be lifted, we told them. We want arms embargo to be lifted. We want the relations again. America to concentrate in areas of assistance like in development, like in capacity building, humanitarian assistance. You see, these are the areas where the interaction and conversation concentrated on. But above all is once more to bring back that smooth relationship we used to have like during our days of the struggle.
Benjamin describes the visit by the U.S. delegation as a gesture of goodwill.
This was a conversation out of old friends who have been disappointed with one another on issues of sanction, on issues of arms, how they can help so that sanctions can be lifted, so arms embargo can be cancelled, and also to bring back into the path of friendship, solidarity, once more between the government of South Sudan and the administration of the United States.
Benjamin says after fighting erupted in 2013, Americans were disappointed to see the same leaders who fought for South Sudan liberation fighting among themselves. He says that year marked the beginning of problems between South Sudan and U.S. governments.
The American establishment and most of our friends in the United States became disappointed and therefore resulted in some of the decisions we believe that this is not the way to treat a friend. They actually spearheaded sanctions, individual sanctions, as well as arms embargo on the Republic of South Sudan.
So Jinder, who headed the U.S. delegation, was sanctioned on January 11, 2012, in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Missouri, Tuwania, and Wande, without parole, in Federation Prison for obstructing of justice and for acting as an under-registered foreign agent in violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act. In federal prison for obstruction of justice, for acting as an unregistered foreign agent in violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act. He was also indicted on money laundering and obstruction of justice in 2008. For VOA News, I am Sheila Pony in Juba.
The Independent Sudanese Journalists Syndicate elected a president over the weekend. The election was the first in more than three decades since former President Omar al-Bashir dissolved the body. Abdelmonem Abu Idris says the syndicate will work to protect Sudanese journalists and build their capacity. He tells my colleague Nabil Biagio the media environment in Sudan will soon be free and vows to work with other groups to restore democratic transition in his country.
The Sudanese journalists have more than 30 years struggled to get back their syndicate because historically the Sudanese journalists, they have their syndicate until Bashir come and dissolve their syndicate and create a new law which allow a journalist who are pro his regime to have what they call journalist union. And this journalist union have nothing to do with the right to defend the rights of the journalist, just to develop the professional of the journalist. For this, the Sudanese journalist, always they are struggling to get back their syndicate until the uprising against Bashir and Bashir regime have been troubled. And then the journalists start again to do the procedures to have their syndicate until they help what they call the General Assembly and they approve their basic law which organize how the syndicate can work and what the goals of the syndicate and what the purpose of the syndicate.
Yes.
And then
I will just get
this,
with you
in this meeting.
Yes, I will get with you just in a second about the goals and but what is the importance of forming an independent journalist syndicate at this particular time in Sudan?
This particular time, the independent journalist is main goals to work with Sudanese people to get a civilian democratic rules for Sudanese peoples and to defend the right of free expression, which is the main basic of media work, and to protect the human rights of Sudanese peoples. and to protect the Sudanese journalists while they are doing their jobs from any violence, even inside their institutions or out their institution, because Sudanese journalists for decades, they have no one to protect them. And also to build the capacity of the Sudanese journalists by training them and they exchange the experience with others in the region and in the whole world, because the Sudanese journalists for decades, they have no proper institutes to train them. Now we have the majority of the journalists, women and men, they are very young. The majority of them, they are less than 30 years old. Those young people, they want institute to train them a great change happened now in the media all over the world.
Yes, and during the rule of President Omar al-Bashir, like you already mentioned, there was a journalist union, which is still is in existence today in Sudan. What is the difference between that union and the syndicate that you were just elected as its president on Sunday?
According to law, have been approved during Bashir regime, the journalist union, it is a journalist that main purpose to development the profession of the journalists. It has nothing to do with protecting journalists or to defend them in the economic situation or in their fighting against the owners of their institution. And also, there is a problem in the memberships. In the old journalists, there is an examination. You have just to pass this examination, and then you get the ID of the journalist union. Even you are not working a journalist, even you are working a soldier or a police officer or a security officer or a lawyer or a doctor, even you pass this examination, you can get the journalist union ID. Now this syndicate is saying it is only the membership for people who are working as a journalist in a proper institute. No, it's not open for others who can be a member of other syndicate, or he can be soldiers or a police officer or whatever he is.
Understood. Yes. Since the military takeover in October, radio and TV stations, as well as journalists themselves, have come under attack. We have had several incidents. What will you be doing to improve the media environment in Sudan and make sure journalists are not being harassed for doing their job?
Well, one of the main purposes to protect the journalists. And to protect the journalists, the best way to have a civilian and democratic rules. We will fight with our peoples to get a democratic and civilian rules, which can protect the human rights, which can protect the freedom of expression, which can protect the journalists during they are doing their jobs.
That's Abdulmunem Abu Idris, the newly elected president of the Independent Sudanese Journalist Syndicate, speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. The head of the South Sudan National Workers Union says union leaders in Jonglei and northern Bahr al-Ghazal are complaining about harassment. The chairperson of the National Workers Union says the recent detention of Jonglei State Workers Trade Union is illegal. Dengai Deng has more from Bor.
Bona Jing Malual, chairman of the National Workers Union, says he is disappointed to learn that some state government officials are interfering with the National Workers Union and harassing its leaders.
Our colleagues in Jonglei State and Northern Bahr al-Ghazal States are being subjected to hardship by their government for holding peaceful demonstrations to demand their rights. Our constitution is clear. The national government backs up the budget of the states. Our brothers at the national level played their parts The problem is with our state government on receiving money for salaries from the national government. They don't pay all our cadres.
Malwal says members of the workers' union in the northern Bahar al-Ghazal state, capital of Wil, are being intimidated. He says some have been threatened with dismissal for demanding salary increases, which were approved by the national government in July 2021. Malwal is calling on national authorities to intervene.
As a national workers' union, we condemn what is happening in Jonglei State because people are detained for demanding their pay. We are following the development there and engaging the national government to come to the rescue of the civil servant in Jonglei. Our call gained attention, and so far, the Jonglei governor has been summoned by the council of the state but has yet to respond.
Malwal says state governments do not have authority to dissolve workers' trade unions, noting the union was formed by an act of parliament called the 2013 Workers' Trade Union Act. Malwal is urging authorities to immediately release detained members of workers' union in Bor.
In Jonglei State, for instance, civil servants exercise their constitutional right by holding peaceful demonstrations at the State Legislative Assembly and Council of Ministers because they were prostrated. We are continuing with our calls for the release of the Jonglei Workers' Union Haight, the Union Secretary General, and that of the Teachers' Union Haight because they were arrested for only demanding their rights.
Article 8 of the Workers' Trade Union Act empowers the registrar to make decisions which may be appealed to the Minister of Justice. The registrar is appointed by the President of the Republic. Julia Akir Duane, the Undersecretary in the National Ministry of Labour and Public Service, says her ministry is concerned about what she calls the misunderstanding between state governments and workers' union.
And last time we have a meeting with the president and the governors to address those issues. Because I'm preparing to go to the parliament, some of the issues we are going to chair.
2 weeks ago, the Jonglei state government decided to dissolve the Jonglei Workers' Union and arrested the union's senior leaders a day after civil servants staged a sit-down strike over unpaid salary arrears. Last year, a committee tasked by President Salva Kiir to investigate the root causes of the civil servant protests in Bor ordered the state officials to pay public servants according to the new salary structure. That order followed peaceful demonstrations by hundreds of Jonglei state employees who rejected the state's modified salary structure, which did not follow the salary structure ordered by the National Labour and Public Service Ministry. John Itorong, who headed the delegation, said the Jonglei civil servants' demands were legitimate. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, calm has returned to the Libyan capital after weekend fighting between militia groups. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Libya's capital was quiet early Sunday, a day after the worst fighting there for 2 years killed 32 people and injured 159. These as forces aligned with the parliament-backed administration failed to dislodge the Tripoli-based government. Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
Of smoke floated over the Libyan capital, Tripoli, Saturday afternoon as militias loyal to the country's two rival governments exchanged bouts of gunfire in the center of the city. Libya's Red Crescent Society is calling for a humanitarian corridor to be opened to the center of the capital to evacuate civilians that have been trapped between rival fighters. Libyan media is reporting injuries while asking citizens to donate blood. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported that incoming Prime Minister Fathi Bashagha, who was named early this year by the country's eastern-based parliament, asked outgoing Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeiba to leave the capital, while Dbeiba responded that he was too busy dealing with the country's business. VOA could not independently confirm the quote. Libya analyst Mohamed Asmar told Arab media that Dbeiba's supporters were trying to prevent Bashagha's forces from occupying the capital, and Bashagha was trying to force Dbeiba's militia forces to withdraw from the city. She says that fighting is taking place in a small, heavily populated area of approximately 3 square kilometers near the center of the capital, and rival militias have turned against each other. Libya security analyst Aya Burwaila tells VOA that the dismal political and security situation is the logical conclusion of 10 years of predatorial foreign and domestic policies in Libya that saw public funds being funneled to foreign-backed Islamist groups by successive unelected governments in the country. Since 2012, she says, the capital has been occupied by a militia cartel that has refused to disarm and has terrorized citizens, engaged in human trafficking, and sabotaged state institutions. Arab media showed video of a convoy of militia fighters loyal to Prime Minister Bashagha from the coastal city of Misrata heading to Tripoli to join the fighting. The exact situation inside the capital remains confused, with reports of at least one militia changing sides. Mohamed al-Manefi, who heads Libya's presidential council, reportedly returned from a visit to neighboring Tunisia as the fighting spread. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
From Cairo, we move to Nairobi, where in Kenya, postponed general elections in 8 elective areas will take place Monday. The vote was postponed following errors on ballot papers, among other issues. The polls were delayed twice, but later the electoral body, through internal meetings with the candidates, agreed on the proposed date. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission, IEBC, had set the by-election for August 23rd before postponing it last week, citing harassment and intimidation of its staff. IEBC Chairperson Wafula Chebukati says his team is ready for the exercise.
The issue that arose in the first postponement was because of errors in the printing of the ballot papers, which the printers owned the errors, and they actually said they'll meet the cost of the printing material. The second postponement was caused by factors which again were outside the commission's control, but we wish them well and we hope they'll have a peaceful election.
Chebukati has, however, faced a lot of hurdles as some politicians allied to the Azimio la Umoja One Kenya coalition claims he's not fit to hold the elections. Coalition leader Raila Odinga is on record saying he prefers IEBC Vice Chairperson Juliana Cherera to oversee the vote. He says Chebukati did not hold credible elections on the just concluded August 9th polls.
Chebukati should disqualify himself from presiding over the elections in Kakamega and Mombasa.
In his defense, the electoral body chairperson responding to Raila Odinga's petition at the Supreme Court listed several top national government officials who he says were forcing him to moderate the presidential results in Odinga's favor or alternatively have a run of poll, supposedly in the national security interest. Chebukati said his deputy Juliana Cherera and commissioners Francis Wanderi, Irene Masit, and Justice Nyangaya were colluding with forces to alter the presidential results. Raphael Tuju is the executive of the Azimio la Umoja One Kenya Coalition. In his response to Chebukati, he admits that he visited Chebukati but refused claims that he tried to bribe him. He commented on some allegations involving the handling of Forms 34A, which is used to document presidential results from the polling stations to the National Tallying Center in Nairobi. The forms include the number of registered voters at each polling station, the tally of votes counted, and those that were not valid.
I've received intelligence from one of the IBC officials who complained that some Form 34A were being brought down and they were being replaced by other Form 34A. Mr. Chebukati is not a stranger to me. He has made claims of what I said when 10 of us were in that room. All the commissioners were in that room. For him to claim that I made some offers to him in front of those 10 is a tattletale, petty lie.
Tuju has threatened to release more evidence that some IEBC officials met him privately at his home. On the other hand, President-elect William Ruto has asked his opponent to stop intimidating the electoral body and the judiciary.
We are confident that blackmail, bribery, intimidation will not sway our courts. Our courts have demonstrated their independence in the past.
As the elections go on today, the Supreme Court is set to make a ruling next week on the presidential elections petition challenging Ruto's win. Reporting for Viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sudan's military chief and chair of the Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah Burhan, recently announced the military will cease participation in political talks and will withdraw from the political scene when Sudan's civilian parties form a transitional government. If the military follows through on this commitment, Sudan's pro-democracy parties can put its transition to democratic governance, which started after a popular uprising ousted longtime dictator Omar al-Bashir in 2019, back on track. That transition was derailed 8 months ago in a military takeover led by General Burhan. Massive protests followed and were met with violence, repression, and often lethal force applied by military authorities. After the takeover, Sudan's economic crisis continued to deepen, with foreign investment and international trade being negatively affected by the political turmoil. In a joint statement, the European Union and members of the Troika, Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States, acknowledged the announcement by General Burhan of the military forces' willingness to hand power back to civilians. The military and security forces should be held to this commitment, they wrote. They must also end violence against civilians and hold to account those responsible for unlawful killings and other human rights violations and abuses. The EU and the Troika called on all parties committed to Sudan's democratic transition to engage swiftly in an inclusive dialogue to form a civilian-led transitional government. They underscored the need for a clear timeline for free and fair elections in Sudan, procedures for selecting a transitional prime minister and other key officials, and a dispute resolution mechanism to help avoid future political crises. They noted that a transitional government must be civilian-led and have broad-based nationwide support, and that the role and oversight of the military must be clearly defined. Nearly 3 years since Sudan began its transition to democracy, we deeply regret the continued loss of life and reversal of important economic and political progress, they wrote. We commend the devotion of the Sudanese people to a more peaceful and just future and honor the sacrifices of those who have lost their lives in support of democracy. The Troika and the European Union look forward to supporting a transitional civilian government that enjoys popular support, reflecting the hope and aspirations we share with the Sudanese people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with the song People Rising by Wrong T. I'm your host, John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for sparing time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
The talent in you is flourishing around.